Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Cynthia Malzaferio in her book Powerful Beyond Measure, Steps to Claim Your Power Within for a Happy and Healthy Life. Welcome, Cynthia. Thanks for writing this. This book has a lot of good emotional clearing techniques and also makes a good, case for understanding that a lot of physical illness is not based in the physical, but actually downward causation from emotional. Would you like to give the listening audience a little bit of your background?
Sure, and thank you for the compliment. It is a really powerful book, and it's a miracle that unfolds for everyone, unique for where they are in their life. So sure, I'd love to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm professionally a physical therapist. Loved working with people and teaching people, educating them on how to treat and hopefully prevent injuries. And what I started realizing when I was even treating patients many, many years ago was that they would start to tell me about their life outside of their injury and often saw links to what was going on in their life and what was going on physically in their life. And I know we'll talk about that a little bit more. Then I also went into ergonomics, and which is a field of stress reduction in the workplace, whether it's low back injury, carpal tunnel, but it was really creating efficiency in the work line, as well as educating the employer and employee on how to work efficiently and pain-free by education. So I've been teaching really people all my life and inspiring them to take ownership in their own life and what they're doing, and creating what they want in their life, which is really powerful too.
So you start off by talking about how the past and the emotional traumas from the past can influence your present. Would you like to introduce that concept a little bit?
It's actually the fundamental root of understanding where energy comes to form. We know by Dr. Einstein how he says, Albert Einstein says, everything's made up of energy. Our voice, the wind, anything has energy to it. You know, even a hard desk or a stone has energy to it. So our emotions have an energy aspect as well. And even as young as in utero, I have many clients that talked about how they felt unloved all their life, only to find out that their single mother struggled with the decision, did they want to abort or have this child? It was a very difficult, challenging decision. And so this energy that even the mother produced and the emotional conflict was actually even exposed and received by the fetus, the growing fetus. And so it shouldn't be a surprise, regardless of our family dynamics, whether you have the most beautiful family, harmonic family, you're still going to have a perception of what happens in your life. You know, whether you're the middle child, the youngest child, or the oldest child, we all have different perceptions of where we are in that family line and what it takes to be loved, what we expect to take on. And during this process, really up into the age of 8, Dr. Lipton, a very famous scientist, has showed us that our brain is receiving information, okay, whether it's cultural, family, religious, environmentally, we're receiving all this information, right? Like a sponge. Our brain is like a sponge taking in information. And this information has an energy to it, an emotional aspect of how you're perceiving it. So if your mother's always saying, hold my hand, we're going across the street, and you're always told what to do to be safe, you may grow up to feel unsafe in your life unless you're always with someone that's always sheltering you. So there might be a lack of trust of self. This is just one very small example. So yes, understanding in the first third of my book, understanding the past and how it actually impacted you is so fundamental, because what happens is this energy, this emotional aspect, I call it the emotional energetic debris that actually resides within ourselves, in our cells, in our inner being, continues to repeat itself even into our present life. And when you start to realize and connect those dots, you also realize the implication and the impact it's having you on your present life today.
Yeah, I was an RH baby, and had my mom had such high levels of antibodies against me that, or against my blood, that they paid her for her blood for research purposes. And I was the first total body transfusion at the University of Maryland. It was experimental at that time in 1954. And I actually had to do a previous, it's not a past life regression, it's like into the utero regression. And I actually felt what it felt like to be attacked in utero.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting. It was like, I mean, I almost died several times after I was born. And I was so yellow that they told my mom I was mentally retarded. So they figured out by the third grade I probably wasn't. But but you know, basically, when I had no idea how violent that attack was until I did the regression. Because of course you have no memory of it. Yeah.
Right.
But it was pretty bad.
I also did a regression. I also had a regression too in utero, and it's in my book too. But it's amazing how, you know, you can actually relive in some form of hypnosis. Mine was not through hypnosis, though. But you can, I actually felt myself growing from this sperm, you know, this egg being impregnated with the sperm and being attacked. And my body was actually jostling as this sperm was attacking my egg and growing. And I saw my limbs growing. And I remember in one moment that's still pivotal to this day, looking in utero at my hands held a certain specific way with my fingers slightly spread and just saying that my hands were amazingly powerful and just in awe of them. And I remember doing the same exact thing as a young toddler, looking up in the sun as the rays would go through my fingers and just saying, oh my gosh, the power that is within the energy of the sun in my hands. I just felt this immediate strong connection. So I'm amazed, and thank you for sharing that story of yourself. Because what that can do, I think, Susan, is it okay if I call you Susan?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Would you rather I call? Okay. Is that, if I could just continue on with your story, is that this type of energy of feeling attacked, that can actually repeat in someone's life. And you may feel persecuted, you may feel attacked, you might feel that life was unfair to you.
Or you may actually be attacked. I mean, I've had multiple assassination attempts because of several things that I've done that corporations don't like. So, no, it's not, I mean, it actually I have a theory about it. It's not so much an emotional thing. It's more a life pattern thing, probably astrological, that in this lifetime I'm going to have, Doreen Virtue, for example, she was on the radio show, and she said, you don't have one male warrior class guardian angel, you have two. And they're very formidable because you defend the underdog and you're frequently attacked for it, you see. That's, I mean, it's kind of like a life thing. So I was attacked first in utero, but then had to survive that. And many healers, you're obviously a healer, so many healers had challenges early in life that they had to overcome. That's a pattern. In other words, you have to heal yourself first before you can heal others. It's very interesting. But I know many healers that have had that. And then so throughout my life, I've had way more attacks. I mean, serious attacks, not just somebody threatening me, but somebody actually trying to kill me. Okay. So I've had multiple of those, and I think it's just that, at the level I'm playing at, that is part of the game. I mean, look at the Dalai Lama. I'm not comparing myself to the Dalai Lama, but look at the Dalai Lama, how many times they've tried to kill him. You see, it just happens. I mean, he almost didn't get out of Tibet, if you've read his story. You know, it's a miracle that he got out of Tibet because they were looking for him. So, so it's just, I think it's just the level of game you're playing. But what I needed to do and what was so important was release those emotions around that.
Right.
And yeah, because the emotions are not helpful. They're not helpful.
Right. And this is what my book really does, is the emotions. It's kind of like a smoldering fire within you, okay?
Right.
And that triggers like being attacked physically
it
or,
is,
you know, within your medical field, you know, you're kind of not the traditional medical doctor in the sense of adding this aspect to it, which is really holistic and fabulous. My son's actually in medical school his last year, and he knows and believes in a lot of what I say, but he also is a traditional, you know, going to be a plastic surgeon.
He's being indoctrinated right now, and he can't really step too far out of that during his training.
No, of course not. But what Alicia was saying, which is so powerful, is that our emotions that are associated with our soul destiny, what you feel inspired to do, you know, to rise above, to state the truth that you see and know to be, that it's very easy for you to have allowed your emotional stress or energy around that of being attacked to have very easily withdrawn. And to say, I'm not going to be this leader, this catalyst. And the same thing with Dalai Lama. We all have choices in life, right? Whether we decide to step into our passion and our beliefs and our truth and what you want and desire out of life and how to touch the world, or we can be this small little fly in the wall that does not and becomes less than. And so that is what my book really hopefully does and unfolds in everybody's spiritual journey where they are, because it continues on. And this book allows you to help release those emotional energy that limits you, that causes repetition in our life, because we need to step into our greatness. And when we do see that spark of light that we are and really embrace ourselves, that's when it allows us to be, as my book title is, powerful beyond measure. And so that's kind of like the birth of this whole thing. By the way, you also have a beautiful woman, female angel, that is very, very big and just filled with so much light and grace, that's even more dominant than the two male spiritual guides.
I'm not going to need so much the protection. Hopefully they can retire, or at least retire in the background.
No, but it's actually coming through very strong that your brilliance, your light, what you're doing is just so much a part of her. You're very much entwined together energetically.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Now, your second chapter is Own Your Story, and this is so important because as we grow up, especially in junior high, I think it starts there, we try to become what we think we should be rather than who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you think back to junior high, that's usually when it starts. You know, as a kid, you don't really care about, or at least we didn't. I don't know about now, but we didn't really care about clothing and everything. We just did what we wanted to do. But in junior high, things start to change, and if you're unlucky, you really try to become somebody you're not, and then that leads to other problems.
Right, exactly. We all want to universally want to be loved and belong, and so that becomes, how do I belong? What do I have to do? How do I have to look? How do I have to behave to fit in? And based on the emotional wounding, you have also got a perception of what role you need to play. Do I need to be the bully because I saw my father or mother being a bully? Or do I need to be submissive? Should I have a voice? Should I not have a voice? So all these perceptions, we have to take some ownership for it. There are perceptions. No one can make you think a certain way. We have to take some ownership in that story and the identity that we have, unfortunately, falsely believed in, that we take on. And the power is that we can change that. What we have created, we can uncreate if we so desire.
And, you know, you really don't start to formulate your life purpose probably until you – well, some people are lucky. Some people know from even childhood what they're going to do. One of my friends, her grandson knew even at five he was going to be a weatherman, and now he's in college studying meteorology. Yeah, it's just very interesting. But most people don't know what they're going to do and don't know what their life's purpose is until they reach their 20s. And then hopefully they're going to be able to, you know, narrow it down and get some inner guidance as to what they should be doing.
You know, purpose is, I think, for me, it's not a static thing. I think we have multiple purposes and passions as we continue through our life continuum. And then as we mature spiritually and through life experiences, we become more primed, more open to newer passions, newer purposes because of our life experiences. So it's not just one goal, one passion. And again, I think that when we're in high school and we're having to get ready for technology school or a beauty school or college or no school and having your own private business, you know, whatever path you're taking, at that point, there's part of that expectation. What do my parents think? How do I fit in? What group do I belong to? Do I go to college like my peers or I don't? So a lot of that kind of builds into our decision making as we pursue the passion or the purpose or the career path we're thinking of taking. So I often don't think you're right. I think you're right. I don't think we often feel from a very young age that we know what we're supposed to do. I always knew my hands were special, and mm-hmm. so I went into the medical field. You know, I never knew right. I was going to be a healer, an author, motivational speaker, and really an inspirer. Right. It's a made-up word, but I love to inspire people. This is one of my passions and really an inner gift of my own mm-hmm. That I now take on. Now, I didn't see that as an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 24-year-old. But as you grow and mature into it, you become of a place of understanding and acceptance. And I think that's a really important part. I know you already experienced that, too. As you accept your place, your position, your knowledge, and decide to go forward with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a maturation there to really be able to do that.
Yeah, and we have soul contracts, too, like... Yeah. We have soul contracts to bring children in. We have soul contracts with partners, all sorts of different business and personal partnerships. So all of these things do kind of factor in. And I mm-hmm. think you're right. It's not just one thing. But in general, there is one, at least for a lot of spiritually based people, there is one thing that is their, what would you say, their true gift, like you said, for you.
Right, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you're inspiring people. And so it may take different forms, but you might have inspired your classmates when you were in physical therapy school. But then you moved on to a much larger audience, you know, after you became a physical therapist.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I've been teaching all my life, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's my own children or whether it's children's school or physical therapy with my patients or clients with my coaching or when I own my own business. I mean, I've taught so many people, and it all comes down to self-empowerment, you know, really
right.
empowering you to take responsibility mm-hmm. to change the life and create the life you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, giving people the power to realize that that's how powerful they are is mm-hmm. sometimes frightening for people to realize that they have that much power. I mean, what do you mean I have this much control as to why I'm unhappy? Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. I always say, if a doctor told you you had to go home and laugh 100 times a day, every single day, and smile and dance or do all these wonderful fun and, you know, things that create decrease in cortisol and increase in all these different wonderful hormones and chemicals, you know, would we really be as, you know, ill as we are in this life, you know? And so often we just want the pill to treat the symptom and not really treat the symptom inside of ourselves, that's the causation of our unhappiness and our illnesses.
Now, your next chapter is called Wounds and Self-Limiting Beliefs. I think probably a lot of the listening audience doesn't understand how emotional wounding and physical wounding affect the body at a core level. That's what Rolfing is all about, you know, releasing that energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what emotional clearing techniques are about. We suppress stuff into the subconscious, and then we forget it's there. A lot of times we even forget if it was real traumatic. We don't even remember the incident. You know, if you were sexually molested by your uncle at age 5, you may not even remember it because it's too traumatic. It's actually clouded over. So wounds are there, and they need to be dealt with.
Exactly. And, you know, just regarding memories, our memories are so strong, and they're not even factual anymore. When you look at a memory, it has changed. Every reiteration that you've seen of that memory, it changes, mm-hmm. it changes and changes and evolves, and it's not even true anymore. And you are so right in that energy lies within ourselves. And it depends where it resides. I actually talk about it taking up residence within your body. So for someone who feels powerless, they may have energy blocked in your solar plexus, which is in your midriff mm-hmm. area. And you might have diverticulitis, you might have hernias, indigestion, irritable bowels, all of these type of things that are going to physically come to be, potentially, if you don't address the energy that's stuck or blocked in that area. Now, you can also have energy that can become irritated, inflamed, like someone who has fibromyalgia, post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress. This is when the energy is super irritated and kind of think of a boiling teapot. You know, the steam's coming out and everything's boiling. It's the same thing. If you don't calm the energy down, sedated, as we call in the meridian and the energy flow, then the nerves, the electrical impulses, the energy in that is very volatile. And you can't sustain that energy exertion without creating fatigue and exhaustion, and your organs start to be impacted. So it's very important, and it's really so exciting to work with patients on this because it really can create great changes in your physical, mental, emotional, spiritual self. It really does affect every arm of your entire being, not just one aspect, because they're all interrelated.
So what about self-limiting beliefs? How do we identify them and change them?
Great. So self-limiting beliefs are a thought pattern that you have that is always negative in some form. It's always limiting you in some way, whether you're comparing yourself to someone else, you don't feel you're good enough, you're happy enough, skinny enough, smart enough, don't have enough friends, people walk out of my life, all of these things, anything and everything is a self-created, self-limiting thought, and it comes from this early imprinting that we talk about and the emotional component that lies within you. And so in my book, I actually go through lots of practical ways for you to identify that, actually being able to identify and articulate it with clarity is very important, because then in the present day, you can address that thought process in the conscious mind, because you're not an 8-year-old, you're not a 3-year-old anymore. You are a whatever age, able to make decisions and action plans of what you're going to do. And then there's also lots of opportunities to release the emotional component, the healing there. I have meditations in there and different resources that will help you release that. And when there's no longer that smoldering fire, that emotional energetic debris I spoke about, then you won't be fueled. You won't be triggered to then immediately react the same way you've always reacted. So, for example, if I could, if you have a self-limiting belief that you're, we'll go with the one from in utero, you're not loved, okay, you're not wanted. And every time you participate in something, you're feeling in your mind, you're getting a thought, no one's going to want to have me part of their team. I won't be picked for this team. If I give my idea, they won't think it's valuable. They won't think it has any integrity. I won't be appreciated. So all of these things, no matter what you're doing, you're having these thoughts, okay? They're repetitious. And so what happens is your body, your mind, wants to protect you from this pain that you're experiencing. So what does the body do, the mind do? It creates defensive mechanisms, behavior mechanisms, protective walls to insulate you from this pain. So what one person might do, and everyone handles this differently, your mind creates a behavior expectation, a way of protection. One person might say that I'm not going to participate. I'm going to be just a task doer. You give me a task, I'll do it. I'm not going to interact. I'm just going to stay at my desk and do my task. It might be even as a parent, you might say, I'm just going to be the parent. I'm not going to get cozy and loving and not expressive as much as I would like to do because I'm afraid I won't get the love back. So you actually isolate yourself, and I often refer to that as almost making yourself like an island, where you're a castle on this island. You have a moat around you with alligators and sharks, and you don't let people in because if you let them in, you're so fearful of not being received or loved or wanted. So that's just one little example, but it really impacts
the whole life. And some of those people gain weight.
Oh, yeah.
They gain weight so that people can't get close to them. There's many reasons for weight gain, but when it really settles in the physical, they may gain weight so that people can't get close to them.
Because there's a reason. Now, no one will like me because I'm overweight. So you're trying to substantiate why your self-limiting beliefs are true, which they're not.
Right.
But
yeah.
It, that's how powerful they are. Mm-hmm. Is you know, for me, my story, my father and mother were divorced. So for me, it was about how can a man love someone and walk out of their life? And it was kind of like this expectation. I expected people who love me would walk out of my life. And here, 30-something years later, my husband comes down one day and says, I love you, but I can't live with you anymore. I'm like, oh, my gosh, my past is repeating itself.
Right,
I was devastated, couldn't breathe. Oh, my gosh. And it was amazing. And it was like, you'll hear in my book, my story, and plenty other stories of many people around the world of how our past impacts us and continues to repeat until we own it, we understand it, and then can transform it and change it.
And Ram Dass talked about the triggers. He wrote some books on this, which are pretty interesting. You know, if you're married and the husband gives you the look, you know, and it triggers something in you, the triggers where you react where to a much greater degree than would be normal, those are the things you need to work on. That's
exactly
how you know.
Yeah, and that was for me, like when my husband came down and said that was a trigger. Oh, my gosh, what did I do wrong? And here I was me being wrong.
Yeah, and it became very physical with you too, see.
Yes,
It went way into the physical because the emotional reaction was so strong.
Exactly. I ended up being overweight. I was on a CPAP machine, which is for breathing when you can't sleep at night and you have anoxia.
Right.
But, I mean, I lost a lot of weight. I lost over 60 pounds. But it is amazing how it can totally impact your life. It becomes so consuming and almost like you're drowning in it. And it's this vicious cycle that sucks you down more and more and holds on to it. And the word that you talked about, the triggers, I like to look at it now. And if people look at their past and different situations, say, oh, if I only remembered, if I only could live that moment again, I would look at it differently. I would do something differently because I'm wiser looking backwards. So when you're experiencing a stress in your life or an obstacle or a difficulty, if we could just take a moment to say, wait a minute, I'm not going to look at this as a negative. I'm going to look at this as a stage. You know, I'm the author of this movie. And I'm going to decide how the outcome's going to be. This has come to me so that I can be the character, the actor or actress on the stage that's going to be this victor. You know, I'm not going to be the victim. I'm going to rise above it. This is an opportunity for me to grow. And it's really that truthful. The universe is giving you an opportunity. It's like someone knocking at your door and saying, okay, I'm here for you. How are you going to show up? And it's not about the other people. It's all about you. And this is where you get this power within yourself to see your greatness and to step into this.
Yeah, one of the limiting beliefs that actually I learned this back in college. It was interesting. One of the limiting beliefs is that there's only a couple of people in the world that could love you. And a lot of people have that limiting belief. And really, it's not true at all. You know, if a relationship's not working out and you're holding on to it because it's, you know, it's your security or your identity or your, you know, whatever, your comfort, you have to recognize when it's not working out. It's not just romantic relationships. It's business relationships, even family relationships. You know, if you can distance yourself from family members who are toxic as well. So you have to love yourself enough to realize that you need to step away from toxic relationships, knowing that there's a whole world out there with billions of people that you can be in relationship with. And if you pray and ask for the right people to come into your life, then all of a sudden all your relationships are much healthier and you're a lot happier. But you see, the limiting belief system is that, you know, I'm not very lovable, so if this person rejects me, I'm not likely to find anybody for the rest of my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. My son, who is in medical school that I just mentioned, he was a Olympic-level diver. He went to Olympic trials at the platform diving. And all his life, he's been either a gymnast or a diver, and he's been rated. You know, they would do their apparatus and their dive, and they would be scored. And, you know, you want that perfect number 10, you know, score. And so then he went into, you know, school, college, and it's all about the entrance exam scores to get you into college. And it's the, you know, if he went for his master's, and it's that score to get for GEDs. And then it's medical school scores, and now it's, you know, he's in medical school, and everything's about judging. And so when he entered into relationships, personal relationships with women, he says, you know, I'm always feeling like they're judging me. I'm never going to be enough for them. This is what he said to me in casual conversations.
Oh,
I'm
my.
Like, sweetie, you know, you've got to realize you've got to stop being judged by or equating what other people judge you as to who you are. And he's a very strong, independent, very caring person to the whole world. Mm-hmm. He cares so much, so maybe to a fault even. But, you know, I said, you need to realize that you have to see yourself as this loving, caring person.
Right.
And if someone doesn't love you for that, then they're not the right person.
Then forget about it. Yeah, really.
Yeah, and
they go their way.
And so it's just amazing that it happens to all of us. And we're not immune to it. Because I know I continue to have experiences, and I'm sure you do too.
Oh, I did. But I learned in college that you can't make anybody love you. It's a very important lesson.
It is.
It really is.
It is.
But if you love yourself enough, because, you know, you've heard the term, you can't give away anything you don't have. If you love yourself, then it's like a magnet. All sorts of people love you.
Right. Right. Exactly. For example, I was writing my book, you know, so here people walk out of my life, right, that love me and love my story. So my editor, you know, who loved my story, was excited about writing my book, she had a death and her partner died. And she couldn't write, you know, she couldn't edit, you know, she had to take her time for grieving. And so I had this big, you know, chunk of time I lost and everything. And finally she said, I can't do this. I'm going to pass you on to someone else. So what's the first thought in my mind? Someone who loves my story, who loved me, walking out of my life. But in hindsight, it was the best thing. I really wasn't overly happy. She took excessive amount of time editing. And the next editor I got was fabulous. So we need to open ourselves up, as the universe will always want to bring something to you that offers you growth, expansion, something better and greater for you, which is also a greater extension that you can give out to the world. So,
you can't judge quickly. Yeah, when something bad happens, you know, I was telling this to my manager the other day. I said, you know, when something happens that you judge as bad, you are jumping on that as horrible. And I'm going, that's really not what it is. This thing that happened is actually a great opportunity. It may seem bad for like the short term, but in the long term, it's a fabulous opportunity. And I told her why, and she goes, you know, you're right. I go, so quit judging things immediately as, you know, a horrible thing. You don't know. You have to ask spirit, and I'm sure you do this. You have to say, well, why did this happen to me, and what do I need to do with it, you know? You don't just judge it as bad and say, oh, I'm a victim. Oh, poor me, you know.
Right. And in my book, I talk about that. What I talk about is, when we react, you know, it's that spontaneous reaction, like you were saying, your manager reacted this way because she's triggered, because she has a past, she has a judgment from all that understanding, and she quickly reacted. instead of mm-hmm. taking a moment and connecting inside to your intuition, which is your soul. You know, you're not your bones and your muscles and your organs. You're a soul. You're a spirit. And when you connect to that inner wisdom, then you can respond to that stimuli and not mm-hmm. react.
And I would, can I give an example of this that I just, I gave her this example. It's really interesting. Julian Assange, who is, I've been watching Risk and The Fifth Element, his story. One's a documentary, one's more like a movie. But Julian Assange, I mean, you have to imagine that it must be very, very difficult to be him, okay, with WikiLeaks. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that his soul, in order to protect him, because the CIA was trying to kill him. I mean, there was no question he was being followed by the CIA. They would have taken him out. Or if somebody liked the CIA that was unhappy with him, it might have been another country. But the point is that sexual assault thing was created so that he would be in that, Ecuadorian place that's totally secure for him. So something that looked like a horrible thing is actually very protective. It saved his life.
Okay.
And now Pamela Anderson's going over there and is his girlfriend, which is hilarious. No, really.
Really? I didn't hear that.
Isn't that great? I mean,
that is great.
But, you know, so you say, oh, that's terrible to be falsely accused of sexual whatever. But it was the only way that his spiritual team could save his life.
Sometimes that's right.
It is. I mean, think about it. Think about when you realize how many people, I mean, the attorney for WikiLeaks was murdered, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously they would murder Assange if possible. I mean, it doesn't take much. And then did you see Snowden's movie? The one out
that great? Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at all the spirit. He's a fifth-level initiate. Look at all the spiritual protection that he had. And what he did just for the American people. He mm-hmm. knew that he would either be thrown in a prison somewhere, never to see the light of day, killed, or what happened when he went to Russia was actually probably the best outcome that his team could get for him.
Right.
But
yeah.
when you think about what kind of protection he had to have when everybody was after him mm-hmm. and the resources that those people had that were after him were... It's just incredible to me to look at these stories and see how much spiritual protection these people have.
Well, it is. And then you say, well, some people are going to say that's listening. Well, what do you mean? I don't have any spiritual protection. And what I say is often we get in the way of that. We don't allow, you know, we have free will. We can't take away mm-hmm. our own free will. And we have choices, yes or no, how we're going to interact and how we're going to respond to these doorways, these, you know, pathways, obstacles we're having. And that's, again, taking that personal responsibility. How am I actually going to interact with this? Because you could be given a perfectly pluralistic, beautiful, illuminated pathway, a roadway that we know the divine sent you. And then you have another pathway, and that is, you know, you see boulders and that, but you see the same safe outcome, even if you're not happy with the outcome.
And you may learn more with the boulders. You actually may learn more.
Yeah. So the point is we have free choice, and we have to realize that, you know, sometimes stepping into the unknown and trusting and mm-hmm. knowing that you are divinely protected and guided, and that the best path is sometimes the ones that we don't understand the most, where we have the greatest growth and we have the greatest opportunity for that best path of, you know, expansion and happiness and all of that we want. So I encourage people to really connect with that inner wisdom, which I also believe has a higher wisdom that comes from heaven, or, you know, everything that comes in from source, whatever word you want to use. If you believe in God, the creator, whatever word you use, that intimate relationship and trust and faith with mm-hmm. that spiritual and energetic realm is so powerful. And, you know, when I talk to people and I do presentations, you know, they always say, you're so, not so much animated, but you are so impassioned. Because I talk about them, when you are on the correct path, mm-hmm. that you are being blown, you are being pushed in an energetic current, like the wind pushing you forward, pushing you to the right, pushing you. and the current of the water and the tide, everything is coming at you. I sometimes will say to my husband, I am on my 14th miracle today. And really, because it just infuses and it's just met with such divine inspiration and pearls of wisdom that come into you that you could not even create in your mind that mm-hmm. these things would come to you. And that's the magic in this whole process. And my book gets you there and takes you through this journey of self-discovery and self-empowerment and really living from a place of total acceptance that you are the spark and light of love and that you love yourself and that you are a beautiful conduit to reach out and touch the world in a great way that's very specific to you using your gifts and your passions. And that's what we're here for us to learn and to do.
Yeah, this guidance is really, really important. And I just have a short story about that. That I used to cover 6 emergency rooms, and so I was called in at 5 in the morning to one of them, and this lady had all these horrible lacerations all over her face. And I walked up to her, and I go, I said, did something tell you not to go out tonight? And she said, you know, you're right. An inner voice was saying that I shouldn't go out. And I said, well, why did you? She said, well, my friends talked me into it. So at 3 in the morning, they go to Waffle House, and her friends and her get into an argument with the staff there, and the cook comes out and takes the condiment tray and crashes it over her head. And it breaks, you know, and then cuts her. I mean, but something, often something will tell you, stay home, you know, don't go out tonight, or, you know, don't hang out with these people tonight.
Right, and you have to follow that intuition.
You have to follow that guidance,
There's
especially
a lot of those stories, too.
Especially if something is not needing to happen to you, you know. It's just,
right.
It's a true danger, and your team's trying to get you to, you know, not run right into it. But
mm-hmm.
it's a process.
You know, there's another example of this, too, and that our activities of life, you know, our cell phone, our car, our house, is mm-hmm. really an extension of who we are. So mm-hmm. if your car gets a flat tire on the right side, for example, the right side indicates a male, and you're being blocked, you're being stopped by a male person in our male mm-hmm. energy, essence in the front. It's stopping you from going forward.
Yep.
And so, same thing, if you have a battery problem, well, there's something wrong with your energy moving forward, or if you're having a problem with your roof, mm-hmm. it's because you're not allowing information to come in. You need to, same thing with your foundation. If you're having a problem with foundation or water in your basement, all of these things are representations of what's going on with you personally as well. And have synchronicities and kind of deja vu moments and symbolisms that you can take away that can really also augment your understanding of what you need to see and hear and understand.
Yeah, I had a problem. I had 2 vehicles, and both of them had recurring brake problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I was supposed to slow down. Well, I didn't listen, okay? And I kept going, and I kept covering 6 emergency rooms. And so mm-hmm. I ended up breaking my arm, and I had to take 4 months off. And so I was interviewing Colette Baron-Reed. She was taking over for Sylvia Brown, and uh-huh. we were talking about it. And she says, yeah, you were going to get lung cancer, so your team decided to make you take care of yourself for 4 months. That's why you broke your arm. It's really
exactly.
true, too.
It's,
so
breaking
the arm in a surgeon, you would think, oh, that's horrible. Well, what's
right.
more horrible, having 4 months off, I went to Hawaii for half of it, or getting lung cancer, you know? You can't judge it too quickly.
It's amazing. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Now, at the moment, you probably were crushed and thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to not
You know, it's interesting. I knew that it was supposed to happen when it happened. It hurt like hell, let me tell you. It really did. I almost passed out from the pain. But something came over me, and I think that that's what comes over you, too. You know, it's
right.
This, your soul really comes into you and says, no, this is good. This is okay. And financially, I was fine, which, you know, I wouldn't have ever thought that that would be true. I mean, everything was just fine. And it really needed to happen because I didn't pay attention to the brakes not being good in my car. So please pay attention to your car first if you're getting signs through your car or your house.
You know, and this feeling that you knew everything was going to be okay, I just had something that happened this past January through March where I got a phone call from my son who lives in Chicago. He's married. Saying, oh, we went to the urgent care. I've got yellow skin, and they're worrying about my liver and their bilirubin and all this. So they start mm-hmm. taking all his lab works, and his enzymes were in the thousands, and they should be under 25.
Right.
And he goes right into the emergency room, and they eventually get him three hospitals later, within a day and a half, to Northwestern in Chicago. And the long and short of it was he was in the hospital for 3 months. 2.5 months, he was in ICU, and he
wow.
ended up needing a liver transplant at the age of 31.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Throughout
what was the cause?
Process, they never found out the epidemiology. Even with the liver biopsy, never found anything, and I knew that. And I had more messages throughout the entire process where it kept coming to me. Angels are all around him. He has nothing to worry about. Everything will be fine. And
wow.
I also said right to the doctor, you will never find out what's wrong with his liver. And he looked at me
isn't
like I was totally crazy. And
it could be karmic
truth.
Then.
I'm sorry?
It could be karmic. You know,
well,
I mean,
I know my son, and he's the most loving teddy bear. He's like the ever-ready teddy bear. He just loves mm-hmm. everyone. He's always going. He had an international job, was flying everywhere, so they
mm-hmm.
thought maybe it was a strain from Asia or this or that or whatever.
Right,
it wasn't.
Yeah.
And he was doing too much and everything, but he also, when he was a child, he had a stuttering speech impediment and was ridiculed
mm-hmm.
and this and that. And we worked on, you know, with speech therapy and stuff, but even when he went to college, I said, you know, they always ask you, what's your strength, what's your weakness? And so most people say it's your weakness is your speech, you know, difficulty. And
mm-hmm.
so we spun that whole answer around to make that become a strength. And he now doesn't have that at all. But through his childhood, as much as he was loving, he was always, there was an anger aspect. You know, I'm angry how people treat me, how,
oh,
you know.
Yeah. And anger goes
know.
To the
and,
liver. Yeah.
And anger goes to the liver, right?
So it was
and
weakened. Yeah. Yeah.
It was weakened, yeah. And, so anyways, the message that we got, and I knew, he was lucky enough, number one on the transplant list because of his age and how severe he was. He should have died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He got a 32-year-old woman's liver, which
right.
was a message to me that he's going to live many, many, many years. He just had his mm-hmm. first child, my first granddaughter, and he is thriving. But, yeah, that's the part which I also talk about in the book is how it affects your organs and your physicality,
yeah.
and this is life-changing, and it's so important for each of us to understand what we are causing within ourselves
mm-hmm.
and outside of ourselves. And this is a powerful moment for anyone that's listening to this call. You're here also. Your intuition has brought you here. Your soul's brought you to your radio show, and there's something you're supposed to be taking away from this message. And I hope you all go out and purchase my book, Powerful Beyond Measure. It's a great tool that will help you awaken to all of this that we're talking about. And we've shared so many examples, you know, your personal life, my personal stories, and
mm-hmm.
Other examples, because I think that's how people can learn and understand when you can reflect and see how it's also impacting other people.
Yeah, all of us have tremendous spiritual guidance. We may
mm-hmm.
not realize it. I mean, some people think they're totally alone and have no
right.
spiritual influence at all, but it simply isn't true. In the spiritual world, they keep telling us that they're here for us, but we need to ask for their help. And so what I want to do is just, would you mind giving your contact information at this point?
Oh, not at all. My website is Cynthia Mazzaferro, and that's M-A-Z-Z. as in zebra, AFERRO.com. Or if it's easier, you can do powerfulbeyondmeasurebook.com, and it'll get you to the same page. And my Facebook page is The Power Within, and then my name's Cynthia Mazzaferro. We have over 8,000 Power Family members there. We're very loving and supporting. I do a lot of Facebook Live readings, intuitive readings, too, and you can find out more about me there as well. So it's,
I just Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to mention, because you're a physical therapist, about Hilarion brought in some information about hand injuries. And I was a hand surgeon. About half my practice was hand surgery. So even an injury has a spiritual meaning in most cases. The thumb is usually will, the index finger faith, the middle finger self-image or self-love, the ring finger financial money, and the little finger is sex and relationships. So I used to tell people that the thumb injuries I got were usually people who were drunk or doing something they shouldn't have been doing, willful. The spiritual people usually injured their index finger for faith issues. The middle finger injuries would tell me how stupid they were to have their accident. The first question that the ring finger is, how much is this going to cost? And then the little finger was trying to pick me up.
Well, you know, interesting you bring up the hand, because actually if you look at Jin Shu Zhu, which is an art of releasing tension, the hand fingers do represent a little bit different than what you said. The thumb is all about worry, you know, if you're a worrier. The index finger is about fear. The middle finger is about anger. The ring finger is about sadness or grief. And the pinky is about trying too hard, and it's associated with the heart. And I do have a story really quick I can tell you about where I was teaching this group for 10 weeks, and they were coming in doing the rice experiment from Dr. Emoto, where you actually have a jar of rice, you put a positive word and negative word, and you bring up the jars. Well, this particular woman had a terrible ring finger on the right, so of course it's a masculine person, and it was the ring finger, and it was very swollen. Her doctor had said she had to have a knuckle replacement. It was the only thing that was remedied. And she's had it for a couple of years. So she came in with this rice jar, and she said, something's wrong with this experiment. It didn't work. And she said, here's my jar of hope. And it turned black. And I said, oh, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, the teacher, how do I deal with this? I let spirit come to me. And I said, so how do you feel about hope? And she started crying. Yeah. And I said, wow. So she said, my husband's in the nursing home. He's been there for a couple of years, and I don't feel any hope. I'm kind of grieving his death before it even happens, which is imminent. And so I ended up doing some tapping exercises with her right then and showed her what to do to get the energy to move past her ring finger, out past her. And the next week she came in, her knuckle was completely healed, full range of motion, no redness, no heat, nothing. And she had full restoration of that knuckle because she was able to release the energy that she had been holding, the pain about her husband. It was amazing.
But you're working with disease, and what I was talking about was injury. So it's very interesting. Injury has different meaning than disease does. Do you see?
Interesting.
Yeah. And I was having dinner with Dr. Klinger, who was like the father of hand surgery, and I told him the story I just told you, and you could see him going over in his mind, and he was just closed his eyes and was thinking. He says, Susan, I think that's correct. It was really wild. He was going through his cases, you know. But it's, I mean, I did surgery for 30 years, so a time and time again, the injury, when somebody cut their fingertip or broke their finger, it fell in that pattern. But disease is different. Disease is totally different than injury. And if I would really appreciate it if you could email me that what you just said, you know, because I would like to know the disease aspect, because I've never heard that. And that's important because I see patients with diseases of their hand, you know.
Well, I think the difference is disease is chronic energy irritation, or, you know, whether it's irritation, agitation, or sedation. And when it's a long term, it's going to affect it differently. And this is a particular form that they use at University of Kentucky this type of massage where they do it. But, you know, when you think of a child, an infant, what do? They suck their thumb. Why? Because they're worrying what's the next time they're going to meet their mom,
right,
or have their food, or, you know, so it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And what this particular practice is, if you're a worrier, because I know I have lots of people that worry, just holding your thumb, taking turns in each thumb, will reduce that stress and worry that you experience within yourself.
Yeah. Well, I know you have the HR at plasticos.com. If you wouldn't mind just putting that real quick in a email, because I need to use that, because like I have patients who have disease in their PIP joints, and you know, like you said, I need to look at Hope if it's the right finger. I do.
Exactly.
I mean, I didn't realize that the disease is different. It would be, though. It's not the same as injury.
Well, and also, do you use tapping as a form of modality for treatment?
Oh, yeah. I've interviewed most of the major authors on tapping, too. I've been doing Temple of Health for 22 years, so I've interviewed just about everybody. But, yeah.
Well, it totally, I mean, right there in class, I was just found which point of her wrist to do and tap, and she tapped. And anybody that wants me to work with them on a healing, you need to reach me on my website. But just doing it there went from a pain level of 10 down to 2. You know, and I just totally do it a couple times a week. And, you know, even like people who have post-traumatic stress or their fight and flight response is elevated and aggravated, you know, just sedating and tracing the triple warmer meridian, which literally takes 2 seconds, just totally takes and diffuses that type of energy. So it's really amazing. We're still trying to educate so many people on what you and I both do and so many other thought workers and healers do, and it's just not something to be afraid of because it's foreign or unheard of or you're not understanding it. It's really something that can augment traditional medicine, and you know, I am a full supporter of traditional medicine. I mean, I'm not saying anyone should change their medical plan. Always, you can use any of these type of energy practices in a collaboration with your doctor's protocol of treatment, and as your symptoms improve, your medical intervention will also change and decrease hopefully in what you need to
And I do want to mention one more thing before we go off the air here. I want people to start investigating CBD oil. CBD oil is probably, for some people, it's not for everybody, but for some people, it is really going to help with so many different things. It helps with chronic pain. It helps with the immune system. It helps post-traumatic stress. It helps autism. It helps people who have brain fog, Alzheimer's. It helps people who can't sleep, have anxiety. If your system is off, if the receptor system is off, and you don't have that enough of the CBD substance, just taking it every day can really make an incredible difference in chronic disease states. Because it's like if you don't have enough thyroid hormone, you have all these symptoms, but if you take some thyroid hormone, they all go away. It's the same thing. But we're just beginning to understand the amazing thing about the CBD system in the body, which is mainly in the gut and in the nervous system, but that it really affects pain and it really affects the immune system. So it's real simple to look at that, to try it if you're if you're dealing with a chronic disease that just hasn't responded. It's just something that I think all healthcare providers ought to know about.
Wonderful.
Okay. All righty. Well, we've got to say goodbye. We've been interviewing Cynthia Malzaferio on Powerful Beyond Belief. Please join us next week for Temple of Health.
Sorry, it's not belief.
Oh,
Powerful Beyond Measure.
I'm sorry. Powerful Beyond Measure. Thank you very much.